Yes, sir. Good morning, sir. May I have your name, please, sir? Good morning.
We're not showing.
We're not showing.
Hang up. Can you have a hang up and hang up?
Move the line, okay.
Then pick it up. Usually when that thing come on there, they have to hang up because they have a phone when you call in.
Right, but it was on our end.
Not on our end.
It's a mirror and it had the slash.
Oh.
So that meant our end was muted somehow. Let's try again.
Okay, good morning, sir, and may we have your name, sir? Good morning, can you hear me, sir?
Yes.
Yes, sir, what is your name, sir?
Jason Sheen.
Okay, if you will just hold on for just a few moments, we will begin your hearing, and the Honorable Mr. Neal will serve as the lead for your hearing this morning. So if you could just hold on, we will be ready to begin your hearing very shortly, sir. So,
this is Mr. Neal.
I'm sorry. The Honorable Mr. Kalanis will be conducting your hearing this morning. So please hold on, sir.
Mr. Chief, can you hear me clearly?
Yes. Could you speak up a little bit? I can hear you.
Okay. Let me adjust the microphone a little bit. We've had some sensitivities with our microphones. It seems sometimes they're too strong or sometimes they're weak. How about now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear.
Very good. Thank you. Just a second. Sir, can you state your full name and ABC number for the record? Oh, yes.
I'm sorry.
Hold on one second, Mr. Chief. Pardon me.
I'm sorry. Carrie Garrison, Victim Services. Did you guys get a note to call the victim?
No.
I
did receive a letter from Maricopa County Attorney's Office. I did not receive a note from you.
I sent it to...
Well, this is not to say that...
Do you have a number?
I have a number for you guys.
May we have a number?
Yes.
Just passing on that. We just need one copy.
If you can read it through this really dark highlight, that is the phone number.
Well, maybe you better read it.
Can you read it better?
Right there.
Okay, thank you so very much. Okay.
Her name is Connie.
Okay, let's see here. Let's see how this is going to work.
We'll get it handled. I appreciate it.
This is Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. It's our understanding that you wish to participate in the parole hearing for Mr. Shue this morning. Am I correct?
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay, if you will hold on, the Honorable Mr. Lee Kawanis will be conducting a hearing, will be leading the hearing at this time. So please just hold on, and he will call on you at the appropriate time.
Okay.
Thank you. And, Dr., can I have that? Thank you. Well, I just wanted to try the name correct. Okay, we'll start the hearing. The name is now. Okay, again, sir, can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
My name is Jason C, and my ABC is 108952.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for 31412B, parole hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on your video teleconference screen, I'll begin with me because I'm the individual sitting closest to you from your vantage point. My name is Louis Pineda. Munoz, I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. Next to me is Honorable Mr. David Neal. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. After him is Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, and on the opposite side of the bench, we have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. I'll begin the hearing with the following summary. Mr. Jason Chee is 43 years old. He's currently serving a life sentence for murder in the first degree. Should he be granted parole to his next consecutive sentence, he's pending a 21-year prison term for burglary in the first degree. He was approximately 18 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was also on adult probation. Mr. Chee was found guilty by jury trial and sentenced on January 6, 1995. He has a criminal history, which includes numerous juvenile offenses and an adult conviction for criminal damage and aggravated robbery. Does everything sound correct so far, Mr. Chee?
Yes.
Thank you. It should be noted that the offense in question represents a serious escalation in violent crime. It should also be noted that he will not be technically eligible for parole until November 14, 2018. I'll read a short summary of the offense in question. On July 17, 1993, Mr. Chee and Javier Sproul murdered 16-year-old Mark Pendleton. That night, Mr. Chee and Javier Sproul, both 18-year-olds and members of a gang, went to the victim's residence because they mistakenly thought the victim had a handgun that might implicate Sproul in another shooting. Upon entering the residence, Sproul grabbed the victim by the throat and forced him to the kitchen floor. The victim was covering his face and begging for his life while Sproul stood over him with a gun. Mr. Chee urged Sproul to shoot him in the head. Sproul then shot the victim multiple times in the head. And again, this is just a summary of the offense. According to Ames, Mr. Chee has completed considerable programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. This is not a regular parole hearing, but he does have a release plan, which includes seeking acceptance at a halfway house, attending counseling for anger management, and support from his family. He's had moderate discipline in ADC from 1997 through 2018, with his last major on February 12, 2018 for disorderly conduct. This is Mr. Chee's first hearing before this board. This is his first hearing before any board. He has no letters of support in his parole packet, although I would like to acknowledge that it would seem his mother and father is in the hearing room for support. We do have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office dated July 10, 2018, opposing his parole, and on the telephone, also in teleconference, we have Ms. Connie Post representing the victim. And when it comes time to hear from both supporters and representatives, I'll ask again if there's anyone else so that we make sure that everyone has a fair opportunity to speak before the board. Okay, Mr. Chee, this is your first hearing. We'd like to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crimes that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you are deserving of parole? Thank you, Mr. Chee.
Can you hear me good?
Yes, sir.
First off, I wouldn't say that I'm deserving of anything. I mean, I take full responsibility for this crime. At the time when this happened, I was so caught up in gang life and just causing so much trouble. And over the years, I've come to understand about responsibility. and compassion and empathy. And now, when I look back on it, I see how terrible, heinous this crime was. And not only did I destroy my life, I destroyed everybody else's, including Mark Pendleton's family. All these years I've been trying to find out about the word remorseful, and it's taking me a long time to understand these things, and I still got anger issues, and I've been working on it though. I've been working on it through all these years, and I'm not here to call to ask for anything, because like I said, I feel I don't deserve anything. And if whatever the family wants, I'll agree to it, you know. Over these years, I've become institutionalized here. And this is all I've known since I was a kid. And I just wanted you guys to know that as I go through this time, I am trying to understand myself, change myself, reprogram myself. During this whole time in prison, when other guys are joining gangs, getting high on drugs, all these things, I've been trying to get in my mind and rehabilitate myself by reading self-help books, writing to people who are productive members of society, and trying to understand how it is to live out there. And I'm not going to say that I'm somebody who's got a clean record. I don't, you know. And it's just that I'm not going to say this is about me. This is about Mark Pendleton, who lost his life for something so silly, immature, just dumb. And I really do feel for his family. And my mom and dad are here to support me. They've been through here the whole time. And they're my only support I have. And they've kept me through this whole time. And I try to hold on to that. And I try not to become bitter and lash out at the guards or to people in general. I try to understand and be a human being and in the right way. Because a lot of guys get bitter, they start blaming DOC, they blame their parents, they blame everybody around them. I don't do that. I've come to understand that these are my choices, the decisions I've made, and that's all I'm here for. Is I really am sorry to Mark Pendleton's parents, his family, his siblings, his friends, and it should have never happened. And that's what I'm here for today, is to tell you, to all of you, hey, I'm sorry. I really am. And I take full responsibility for his actions.
Mr. Chi, I have a question for you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
When you said at the beginning, and I think you said something similar at the end of your statement, that you wanted to do what the family wanted, did you mean the family of the victim?
Yes. Yes. If they're coming here to tell, hey, we don't want him, I agree with it. I'm not going to be angry about it, because I understand if it happened to me, I would be doing the same thing. And I've tried to empathize and find compassion in that. I'm just sorry to them for what happened. I mean, it's, I can never take it back for anything.
Well, sir, I'm not going to do anything to dishonor the victim's representatives. I do want to commend you for how you stated that, because certainly we hear a lot of cases and we hear people say things like, I take full responsibility, but then we listen and there's not a lot of responsibility going on. But if you're putting this in the context that you really care about how the victims feel, I do want to commend you for that, for being very specific. Regarding your discipline, I have some questions here. I know you made you took some accountability for anger management. It would seem that you've had moderate discipline. And when I say moderate discipline, you know, oftentimes we see many pages of discipline. Your discipline's not that long, but it would seem that after around 2008-2009, you really started to taper off. And you went, you had a major for disorderly conduct in 2009. You went about 4 years without any discipline, then a disobeying a verbal order in 2013, and then about 5 years with no discipline. And then in 2018, very close to this hearing, you had a major for disorderly conduct. So what happened? I think you certainly were aware that parole to your next consecutive sentence was getting close. So what caused this incident that happened only recently in February?
Okay, the one that just happened, I was with a friend. He's actually a friend. And we did start playing around and it got out of hand. And I got angry because I didn't like the way I was being treated. So it wasn't as bad. In the report, it says I hit him 3 times. But it wasn't really like I hit him hard. They're looking from the camera angle. And I did, but we were just play fighting. And I took full responsibility for that too. I told them in the report, hey, it's my fault. And I took that ticket. But the times I wasn't getting in trouble and stuff is I had a job on the yard. They gave me good jobs and I was constantly busy working and staying out of trouble. And now that I've come to these yards, there's no jobs. It's hard to find work that's going to keep me busy all day. And that's what happened. That's what occurred.
Let's talk a little bit about anger management. You took some ownership for your feelings, but what do you think is beneath some of these anger management issues that you struggle with, sir?
I think it's a lot of frustration of just being around other inmates that are frustrated themselves. And they're lashing out, and everybody's complaining. And I think it's just the buildup of that. Everybody wanting, because I really don't get mad. Like, a lot of these guys, they get frustrated because people don't write them. They feel entitled to everything. They feel like they got everything coming for them. And I'm not like that, but I hear them all day complaining, and I'm sitting there just soaking all this anger from everybody else. And I try not to be like that. And I try to go into my own little meditation thing and tell in my mind, hey, this is not the way you're supposed to act or function. And I think sometimes that's where the anger comes out, the frustration of it.
Admitted openly that you were involved in gang life when you were young. I think there was some notation in your pre-sentence report that you were associated, I didn't really write it down because sometimes we don't get too much into the gang activity because it's often allegation, but were you involved with Wedgwood?
Yes.
And so you were involved in this street gang?
Yes, I was.
Was this incident over something to do with gang activity? The murder?
Yes and no.
And there's no justification for a murder. I'm not looking for that. I'm just saying what was going on at that time in your life?
Well, I was involved in gangs. We were hanging out. We were drinking. We were just all running around wild, going to parties. And we had lent Manuel Vargas a gun, and he was part of Wedgwood at the time too, but he had his own friends. So he lent the gun to Mark Pendleton.
Not law.
Hold on 1 second, sir.
I apologize.
Yeah, Ms. Post, we do appreciate that these hearings are traumatizing, but if you could, just keep your comments to yourself until it's time for you to speak, but you will have a chance to speak to this board, okay, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
And you will be treated with respect. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Chi, go ahead, sir.
Well, we asked Manuel where the gun was at, and he led us to this apartment over there. And when we went inside, our whole intent was to get this weapon. So we went inside and we're like, hey, where's it at? And he got on the phone. I don't know who he was talking to. And he was saying something about he's gonna get it back or whatever. And when we went outside, we all were just talking, and then we were going there and just rob him. So we went back inside, and when Javier grabbed him, somehow, I still don't remember, it's kind of hazy on that part. He grabbed him, and then we all were yelling. Everybody was yelling at one time because there was numerous people in the apartment. And everybody was yelling and yelling and yelling. And I'm the one who said, shoot him, shoot him. I said, shoot him. And he shot him. And
what happened to the, I'll ask you, I mean, you have the prosecutor here in a large report, but what happened to Javier, what happened with him in the criminal justice system?
Well, he's around somewhere, I don't know where, but he's around in prison somewhere too.
So as far as you know, he's still in the prison system?
Right.
Another question I have is, and I guess it's more of a curiosity in this case, but you're saying that the victim was also associated with Wedgwood? So,
no.
Oh, he wasn't?
No, it was Manuel Vargas that was the one that led us to him. I don't know what relationship they had to each other or anything. He's the one who led us to the house over there.
Okay. So, this individual was not a Wedgwood associate then?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions at this point. I don't have any questions from fellow board members. Mr. Chi, what I'm going to do, as per the protocol of these hearings, I'm going to ask if any of your supporters want to speak before the board. They'll be given that opportunity, and then when that's done, We'll turn it over to the victim's representatives. We have a prosecutor who's in the room, as well as victim's representatives. And then we will return to you for the end of the hearing. But right now, I'm going to ask if any of your supporters want to speak before the board. According to our sign-in sheet, we have Agnes and Roger Chi, is that correct? Do either of you want to speak before the board? Or both? You're certainly welcome to.
Sir?
And if you're willing to speak, you need to come to the podium and state your name. And pardon me, I'm not trying to be rude, but we have a protocol. If you can state your name.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Agnes Chi, and I'm defendant's mother.
Okay, ma'am. And what would you like to share with the board?
And I just want to say this is the first time that I'm coming in front of the board, and I appreciate what he's doing and giving him a chance to speak up for himself, and we really appreciate that. And all these years that he's been in here, it has really slowed us down, you know. And we're getting old. My husband has Parkinson's really bad now, and we need somebody to be there to help us. But he's in there, and he calls all the time and check on his head, but he's in an advanced stage right now, so that's all I can say. I mean, just, you know, give him a chance, you know. He's a good kid, and I really appreciate him and loved him very much. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, ma'am. Will you be the only person speaking today?
Yes.
About your son? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for your time. Okay, at this point, just for the sake of order, I will ask the prosecutor if you have any particular order of speakers on behalf of the victim.
My name is Carrie Garrison, and I'm with Victim Services. I do have a letter from Tim Seberg, the brother of the deceased victim. Dear parole board members, hi, I am Tim, Mark Jason Pendleton's brother. I am just 1 year younger than him. My brother was just 16 when he was murdered, and I was 15. I want to begin by telling you just a little about who my brother was. As little boys growing up together, we always did everything together. Ethan was often asked if we were twins. We always shared the same room. My brother and I would plan our days together, even our futures, like what type of women we were going to marry, how many kids we were going to have. Mark, like a lot of older brothers, would talk with me about choices I have, shouldn't make, or should make. He always gave me good advice. We even shared clothes as teenagers, so we would look cool. I never knew that I would ever be alone and not have him by my side. He had always been there, and I thought that he always would be. Mark loved helping people. He volunteered his time at local food banks and attended church. My brother always stuck up for others when being bullied or made fun of. He had a way about him that always brought the best out in people around him with his caring, kind ways, and was always smiling and helping our mother with things. He had a way to see the good in everyone. Mark dreamed of being in the Air Force and was planning on joining right after high school. All of my brother's hopes, dreams, and his whole life that he will never get to live was taken away from him. Mark will never get to see his family, mother, all of his nephews, and get the opportunity to be a brother, an uncle, son, or even a husband that he hoped for. As his family, we have all been so torn over this like it just happened yesterday. The wounds have never healed. It is even harder on holidays. birthdays and special moments are dampened by the grief of Mark not being with us, not being with us all. He was our light. On the day my brother was murdered, he was just trying to enjoy a grilled cheese sandwich in his home, getting ready to go to a Mark Chestnut concert, when these guys came into our home and murdered him for no reason. They did it for fun. They did it. They did not know him. He had no gang affiliation, and there was no reason for this to happen to my brother. While my brother was praying and begging for his life after already being shot in the arm, this coward said, in quote, "He is not dead yet. Shoot him again in the head." As he turns the radio up to muzzle the sound, he directed the execution at full detail, standing next to the person who pulled the trigger, in which it was just as bad, if not worse, than pulling the trigger himself. I saw him a day later on the news interview crying, saying he didn't do anything wrong. Not at once did he say anything about being sorry or showing any remorse for what he had done, but was just concerned about going to prison. Explained to the reporter that he had been to juvenile detention center and that was nothing, but now he's going to prison and is scared. Those tears was not for my brother. He was only concerned about himself. This kind of careless, cold-hearted coward does not need to be or deserve to be released back into society. I ask the board to please continue justice and not allow this person to be granted parole. The death penalty was on the table, but the judge didn't like the idea of sentencing an 18-year-old to death. Though I wish he had, and we wouldn't have to be even discussing the idea of this man being released.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think you want to address that.
Yes, I wasn't sure if there was anyone else in the room, and then I'll ask Ms. Post. Ms. Post, can you hear me?
Yes.
If you could state your name for the record.
Case.
And what would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
Well, first off, I'd like to apologize for the interruption, but the statement that she made just now about my son being loaned a gun is just absolutely wrong. He may just believe that to be the case, but that is not what happened. The gun was given from Manuel to my other son, Tim, because the boy wanted to borrow $20 in the acquaintance of my son, Tim. My son, Tim, loaned the boy $20, so he thought the gun was a broken gun, and he didn't figure the kid would ever come back for the gun or give him his $20, but he gave it to him. That she stated that Manuel got on the phone, it was Tim that he was talking to. And Tim was trying to tell him that I'll find it for you and give it back to you. And that is what happened that night. My son, Jason, had no gang affiliations, never ran around with gang members, any of that kind of stuff. He wanted to be like Tom Cruise and be an Air Force pilot. Had intended to go into the Air Force, and was it half of the Brenda knew my son, and was, you know, really thought a lot of him. So they was all hurt and in shock when they had to show up to my house and find him dead. Also, I'd like to say that if it meant that I needed to make a trip to Arizona to come to Florida with every year for the rest of my life to see that this person does not go free and do this damage to another family, then that's what I'm going to do. I would ask you, if you turn down this parole request, that you at least wait another year to have another one. When he stood over my son threw his right arm up, baby, please don't kill me, I don't want to die. 1.22 bullet went through his hand and lost his elbow. He curled up in a ball, and that man before you stood there. The man that shot my son, the first shot, took the gun and put it back in his waistband. She walked over, turned up my stereo in my house, and told him he ain't dead yet, man. Tap him in the head. Tap him in the head. That's the last thing my son ever heard. And for 25 years, every day of my life, I knew that you tapped the middle next. But I can tell you that I feel the worst. I feel sorry for Jason Shee. I feel sorry, most of all, for his mother. But the difference is, his mother can go to that prison, and she can see her son. She can even hug him in visits. I will never consent to do that. And I do not want to see this man ever free so that some anger issues can get the best of him. And then he can turn around and do this to another family. That's done. I'm done.
Thank you, ma'am. I recognize that this is very difficult and emotional, and I want to thank you for representing today. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. I have no questions from fellow board members. Ms. Post, we're going to continue with the hearing, so if you'll just remain on the phone, I'm going to ask the Maricopa County prosecutor if he has anything he wants to share with the board.
Thank you.
And if you could state your name, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Matthew Elias. I'm the Deputy County Attorney with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. There have been a lot of talk about the offense in this case, so I'm not going to belabor that. I wanted to say that this was an execution of a 16-year-old boy who was lying on the floor of his own house begging for his life. And Mr. Chi participated in that execution and since his time in the Department of Corrections, he has had 27 disciplinary infractions, and I recognize that the board has covered those. I think the fact that there was a break between 2008, 2009, and 2018. However, the fact that knowing that this hearing was coming up, that Mr. Chi did in fact commit a major violation as recently as February 2nd, 2018, is important for the board to consider in terms of whether or not this individual is somebody who should be released to the society. Also, when determining whether or not an individual is going to be a successful probationer or parolee in the future, it's instructive to look at how somebody has performed in the past while under supervision. For Mr. Chi, he committed the felony offenses of criminal damage and aggravated robbery on June 28, 1992. For those offenses, he was placed on probation on January 12, 1993. Approximately 6 months later, while he was still on felony probation, he participated in the murder of Mark Pendleton. So in terms of whether or not an individual remains a danger to society, it's instructive to consider how they've performed in the past while under supervision, and the fact that Mr. Chi was on probation for only 6 months before he committed this murder and was still involved in gang activity based on his own statement, shows that he's an individual that represents a danger to society, and for those reasons, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office respectfully objects to any parole or moving Mr. Chi to his next consecutive sentence. Mr. Kiernis, I know you brought up the co-defendant, Javier Stroli.
Yes.
When I was researching for the letter that was submitted for Mr. Chi, the information I found was that Mr. Stroli was convicted in a separate trial of both first-degree murder and first-degree burglary. He received a life sentence on the first-degree murder and a 21-year consecutive sentence on the first-degree burglary. That's the information I have. I don't know about any of his parole eligibility or if he's come before the board at all, but that was the information that I was able to find out for Mr. Spoil.
Thank you for sharing that. And again, this is not, it's Spoil. Yes, I have a scholar Spoil, pardon me. I suppose if he does appear before the board, we can ask him directly. But that was more of to try to get an understanding of the greater case.
Sure.
And I appreciate that follow-up. The other question I have for you on behalf of the state, and that is, it sounds like that there was other people at the house when this awful incident happened. So did his brother witness this murder? We have a note here that says Tim Sebring survived gunshots.
No,
I'm talking about what a note I have. A note that was provided here says parentheses survived gunshots. So I wasn't quite sure if there were other shooting victims in this case.
It's my understanding.
You can state your name, ma'am. I really didn't want to put you through that. That's why I was asking the prosecutor. But if you
want I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. I didn't hear you.
But if you can state your name again, what did you have to offer, ma'am?
My name is Connie Coates, and the mother is Winston. My son, Tim, was not present at that house that night. There was a girl present there at the house with my son when everyone else that was present in that house that night were gang members that were brought to the house with Jason Chew. He was the older gangster in the bunch. Manuel is the person that knew my son. He turned state's witness, and he is the one that's how we know word for word what was said in that house, what exactly happened, and everything.
Thank you, ma'am. Certainly, we're not here to retry the case, but we do gather as much information as we can so that we can get a full picture and vote on the case. So thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
The only thing I would add is that it's my understanding that there were no other shooting victims.
Okay.
It was Mark Pendleton, and Manuel and the other female occupant of the house at the time were the witnesses at the trial that provided a substantial amount of information as to what occurred in the house.
Thank you, sir.
Does anybody else on the board have any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay, do we have any other victims' representatives, or do we happen to have more people here on behalf of Mr. Chi, just to make sure, because we have quite a few people in the hearing room today. Okay, Mr. Chi, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask...
Mr. Johnson wishes.
Oh, I'm hearing you, Mr. Johnson. Yes, yes, sir.
I just had a question for Mr. Chi, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
So I just had this incident that you just had recently just kind of concerns me because according to the information that we have, it says that you placed another inmate in a headlock. You pulled him to the ground and in front of dorm three, and then it appears that you struck him several times in the ribs.
Yes. Like I was saying, he's my friend. We've known each other 15 years in here. And as we were playing at the time, and when I grabbed him and I pulled him down, on the camera, it actually looks like I'm hitting him, but the camera's in the back of me. It looks like I'm hitting him, but I'm not actually hitting him. And so when they asked me, did you do this? I said, yes, I did do it. And he says, why? I said, well, we were just playing around at the time. And he says, well, you hit him. And then I said, yes, I hit him. I agree with that. Then I hit him. But in reality, I really didn't strike him. We were just playing around.
Okay, Mr. T, the reason why I asked you that is because earlier you told Mr. Quinones that you were angry at something that he did or the way he handled you, and that's why that situation occurred. But you said that it occurred because you were angry. You never said anything about playing around or harshly.
What I said was, I was angry. It turned into get angry is what happened. When we were playing like that, I got angry, and it looks like I'm hitting him, but I'm not really hitting him. When they pulled him in, they asked him, "Do you got any marks or bruises on your body?" And he was like, "No, we're friends. I do not got no marks." He showed him he didn't have no marks or bruises. I did get angry at that time, though, for when we were playing around.
So why did you get angry?
Because I don't play like that. When people in here start playing and like getting real wrestling and aggressive, that's when I was like, "Whoa, this is getting too serious here." So I kind of backed off.
That didn't sound like you backed off if you put him in the headlock and threw him to the ground.
Yeah, but we were just playing at that time. We were just playing around.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions from colleagues? Thank you. Okay, Mr. T, as I was stating, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? Really ask that you don't repeat anything that you have already shared, but this is your hearing. So is there anything else that you feel is important for the board to know or understand?
No.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chi.
No.
The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, especially because this is the first time you've been before the board. But what it is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our individual votes. Under the open meeting laws of Arizona, we don't discuss these cases before we come in to the hearing room. We don't vote ahead of time when we have secret votes. The deliberation happens right here. We will make our decision, and we will come back to you shortly. Okay, sir? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I think because this is Mr. Chief's first time before the board, certainly we have supporters in the room, in his family, and victims' representatives, in particular the victim's mother. I think it's a good time to recenter and state for the record that the board's core values are public safety, the concerns of victims, and the inmates' rights. Therefore, suggesting that these cases aren't one-dimensional. We don't look at one dimension of the case. We have to look at the totality of the case, and we vote individually, and we vote our conscience. And I will say that, as I pointed out during the summary, that this offense represented an escalation of violent crime, a crime which happened when Mr. Chi was on probation for a felony conviction, although very young. We recognize, again, we're not here to retry the case, that the judge may have taken into consideration his age when considering the death penalty, but that he certainly received life imprisonment with the possibility of parole in 25 years. Based on the serious and violent nature of this crime and his recent disciplinary infractions inside the Department of Corrections, I personally don't believe that Mr. Chi is ready to comply with the conditions of a supervised release, but that's where I will begin the discussion. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. I agree. I just want to say on the record that I agree with your conclusion, and I certainly support that. But I also want to say I believe it was possibly Ms. Post who said at the time that Mr. Chi didn't express any remorse. But I'm today, 25 plus years later, I'm very remorse from him. And I just want to acknowledge that people do change and people mature. And although I started by saying I agree with your recommendation, but I also want to acknowledge and that Mr. Chi has developed personally, and seems like he is an individual who is aware of what he did and the devastation that his actions caused. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse, and I want to thank you for filling in the blank there, because in this deliberation, I did want to note that I am nonetheless impressed with the sense of accountability from Mr. Chi. I recognize that that's cold comfort for victims, but I am sensing that he is on a trajectory for improving himself, and I think it should be acknowledged. Thank you.
Mr. Kennedy, I agree. I think that Mr. T is remorseful for what he's done and has come over a period of time to regret and understand that the harm that his actions has caused. I am tell you that I am concerned about his anger and what he's doing, and that he's just recently had this incident while he's been incarcerated, and also the fact that he states that he's institutionalized and he doesn't know what he would do when he get out. That concerns me too, that he feels like that, although he has spent all of his adult life incarcerated. He's been in prison the entire time, well, in custody the entire time of since he's been an adult. So I just agree that I don't think that at this point in time Mr. Chu would be susceptible to being released. But I think if he continues to work on his anger, which he states he knows he has an anger problem, he has to continue to work on that and get that under control, it could be a different situation at that time. But at this point in time, I do agree with your position.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further input from colleagues? Hearing no further input, I am going to make a motion, and that is regarding Mr. Jason R. Chi, ADC number 108952. My motion is to deny parole to his next consecutive sentence, or option of discharge, and based on the year of offense, I will ask for a 1-year set-off, and that is my motion.
Second.
Agree. Seconded by Mr. Neal, agreed upon by Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Ms. Rittenhouse. Release type denied is 412B411. That is, again, parole to his next consecutive sentence, or option of discharge. And my reasons are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, serious bodily injury, violation of previous probation, history of assaultive behavior, prior criminal history, for institutional behavior, and that's up and through, pardon me, through 2018, recent disciplinary infraction through 2018, history of assaultive behavior, and I think that's all I have at this point. Does anyone else have anything that they think is appropriate? Okay, Mr. Chi, this board has voted unanimously to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I hope that you heard what we had to say. We do believe that you're working on self-improvement, and please take that as encouragement. As one voting board member, I do appreciate your sense of accountability. Do you have any questions?
Just thank you for hearing me out, and one last time, I'm sorry to the victims, family.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. Do this will bring our hearing to a conclusion, and I want to thank both the inmate supporters and victims representatives for attending today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chu, would you put the 03 back on the phone, please, sir?
Okay.
Thank you.